Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profile. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, Profilers. Welcome to a very special episode of Profiles. First of all, we want to thank you for helping us take our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance, over 3,000 likes.
Wow.
Thank you very, very much. Are you not entertained?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
All right. High fives will be had on today's show.
Take a
shot. Starting right now. Take a shot because we have a very special show. We are spotlighting Oscar winner Russell Crowe.
Yes. Born in New Zealand, but spent a lot of time in Australia, so he identifies as being Australian. Oscar winner. And he has had such an amazing career when you look at all the directors he's worked with and all the different roles he's done and all the different movies he's been in. I mean, especially between 2000, 2002, he was nominated for 3 Oscars in a row.
Yeah.
For The Insider, then Gladiator, which he won for, and then Beautiful Mind.
Well, the thing about Russell Crowe is he is so committed, takes himself very, very, very seriously as an actor, very intense, a perfectionist in every sense of the word. But look at these great movies. When you're going back on his IMDb page and looking at all the movies he's made, really one movie after another, and our Fast Five, this was another tough one.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the movies we included is going to be a little controversial, but we're going to back it up with why we went there.
Exactly.
But this is, I mean, he's an amazing actor. He gains weight. He loses weight. He gains weight. He puts on muscle. Again, physically and emotionally, very, very committed actor. Makes great movies, great performances.
Yeah, he holds himself to a high standard, and he holds everyone else to a high standard, too. He is completely committed, like you said, to the work. And that's why I think he works so well with Ridley Scott. He's done 5 movies with him now. Their movies together have made over $800 million.
Yeah.
And they both are this kind of driven person. So they both will stop at nothing to tell a story. And that's what Russell Crowe loves to do, is storytelling.
Well, we have a great story. It's called It's a Wonderful Life, where we tell all about Russell Crowe's amazing life. And we're going to run that for you right now.
Roll it.
Actor, musician, producer, and now director, Russell Ira Crowe was born on April 7, 1964 in Wellington, New Zealand. When Russell was 4 years old, his family moved to Sydney, Australia, where he became a child star on local TV. He moved back to New Zealand when he was 14 to become a rock star, performing under the stage name Russ LaRock, and released several singles that never charted, like I Just Wanna Be Like Marlon Brando. After returning to Australia at age 21 to resume his acting career, Crowe made his feature film debut with 1990's The Crossing. But his career really took off 2 years later, thanks to his gripping breakthrough performance as Hondo in Romper Stomper, for which he won the Australian Film Institute Award for Best Actor. Crowe crossed the pond to make his mark in American films with 1995's Virtuosity and The Quick and the Dead. Those were quickly followed by critically acclaimed turns in prestigious films like L.A. Confidential, The Insider, and of course, Gladiator, for which he won the Oscar for Best Actor. Are you not entertained?
And a big hi to Rory Review, who's watching live for the first time on YouTube.
Yay!
I'm keeping an eye on the live chat. People are saying they're going to take shots when we do high fives, and so they're drunk already.
They're drunk already. Let's just keep that party going right now.
Oh, one time we're going to do it.
One more time
we're
going to do it back to me, and it's going to hurt me. Yes, the profile high five. This is a very special show because not only did we get to sit down with Russell Crowe, who made its directorial debut with his new film, The Water Diviner.
Yeah.
But after months and months of us reaching out to publicists and studios,
hustling,
We get an email. The studio came to us.
That's right.
They came to us, and you called it right when we first started doing profiles. She said, "She said, Mance, one of these days, they're going to come to us and ask them and ask us to sit down with their clients for profiles." And that's what happened with Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
So big thanks to our friends at Warner Brothers for reaching out to us and making this happen.
We had
a great interview. It was very cool. We turned the corner on profiles with this one.
It's exciting.
But with Russell Crowe, like what was – I think your first blood is going to be different from my first blood. It's not just because of the 13-year age difference here.
It will be different because Russell had a long career in Australia before he came to America. So my first blood would be in Neighbours.
Okay.
This is the soap opera that every actor has been in, every Australian actor apart from Geoffrey Rush and Cate Blanchett have either been in Neighbours or Home and Away. So Russell was in Neighbours only just for four episodes in 1987. He played Kenny Larkin, who was an ex-con. He had a mullet. But if I'm going to talk about films, the first film that I remember seeing him in was Romper Stomper.
Okay.
Whew, and that is a tough movie.
Yes, it is.
He was terrifying. I think I saw it on TV, so it was a couple of years after it came
out. Wait, you saw Romper Stomper on TV?
Yeah, I think it was edited.
Okay.
It was edited down.
What was it, 5 minutes long?
It was on TV, and it was, I still remember just being scared of it. And rewatching it again has the same effect.
Yeah, totally does.
What about you?
Mine was actually much, much later. It was LA Confidential. Now, that movie came out in 1997. He had already done supporting turns in The Quick and the Dead and in Virtuosity. American films.
Yeah.
But I didn't see those till afterwards. I didn't see those till later. But as Bud White, here's this guy. I mean, it was an ensemble film, but his performance was magnetic, commanding. You don't want to mess with this guy. But right then and there, I went, wow, this is a guy to follow. This is an actor to follow. Of course, within just 2 years, like you said, he had this 1-2-3 punch of The Insider, Gladiator, and A Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
And even still to this day, he's just making one great movie after another.
And trying different things.
Definitely. Trying his turn behind the camera.
Yeah.
But number, you know, when picking our Fast Five, we went with a controversial choice for number five, which is...
Hear it.
I'm going to tell you something. I want you to listen to me, okay? This is not your country.
Romper Stomper.
Now, people may say Romper Stomper over Master and Commander, Romper Stomper over Cinderella Man, 310 to Yuma, American Gangster.
I know.
Well.
I know, but I really wanted to include Romper Stomper because I wanted to shine a light on the career he had before he came to America.
Right.
And this was the film that actually helped propel him to the States, and it made directors over here take notice. It was in 1992, directed by Jeffrey Wright, and this was 4 years before American History X, and, of course, well after Clockwork Orange, but it has the same feel as both of those movies because it's got violence in suburbia, and it's a kind of violence that you don't want to see. Very racist there. A group of neo-Nazi skinheads living in Melbourne. Hando is the leader and played by Russell Crowe with such intensity.
Very intense.
And this speaks to a side of Australia that people don't want to talk about and definitely don't want to see on screen, and that's why I think it's an important film.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Clockwork Orange because in his review for Entertainment Weekly back in the day, Owen Gleiberman said, "What begins as a real-life Clockwork Orange quickly turns into a skinhead James Dean movie." Mm. And you also mentioned how filmmakers in America took notice of Russell Crowe because of Romper Stomper. You're right on the money with that because Douglas Wick, who produced Gladiator, I'll never forget when I covered that red carpet. And this was before I even worked for Access Hollywood. And I was covering for some website that doesn't even exist anymore, but it was called Big Time Hollywood. And I was interviewing Douglas Wick, and he said that he picked Russell Crowe. They went for Russell Crowe because of Romper Stomper.
Yeah.
Curtis Hanson, who directed 1997's L.A. Confidential, chose Russell Crowe to play Bud White because of Romper Stomper. And those are the reasons Romper Stomper is in our Fast Five. It is a riveting, harrowing, disturbing, it is a dangerous movie. Watching it again for the first time in a while, it is just as potent and powerful and hard to shake off.
Yeah, it is really hard to shake off and really hard to stop thinking about. It's funny because in Australia, so our veteran critics, Margaret Pomerantz and David Stratton, and they were on a show called At the Movies for a long time, recently just retired, but they were like our Siskel and Ebert.
They retired?
Just recently.
Malone and Mance.
Yeah, we should. Let's go down under.
Let's do it.
Start again. But David Stratton, interestingly, he refused to rate this movie when it came out. They give a rating out of 0 to 5 stars. He gave nothing because he was so shaken up by this film, and he just thought it was too violent, too dark, and very, very dangerous. People might see it and then be encouraged by it. And since then, he's changed his tune, and he says that it's an important movie, important Australian movie. But years after his review, Jeffrey Wright saw him, the director, in the Venice Film Festival and poured a glass of wine over him.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Dangerous.
It was a very controversial movie when it came out.
Dangerous
for sure.
To watch, dangerous to review. It was released in Australia on November 12, 1992. Didn't come out in America until June 9, 1993. 9 nominations from the Australian Film Institute. It won 3,
yep.
Including, like we said in our wonderful life, Best Actor for Russell Crowe. And our profilers, David DeSower, I hope I got that right, DeSower had to say, Russell Crowe managed to elevate Romper Stomper. It is a flawed film, or more to the point, 2 flawed films folded into one. But the best part, of course, was Crowe. Imperfectly written and poorly styled, he still managed to create a character that was interesting and believable. He continued this trend by taking films to a higher level or pulling off roles where a lesser performance could have sunk the production.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Well, there are so many great movies, and sometimes it's the more understated scenes that really have an impact. And when it comes to our right stuff,
yes.
My favorite scene is from The Insider.
Yes.
I love this movie. Full disclosure, it is actually my favorite Russell Crowe film, the way he just completely disappeared into this role. And we'll talk more about that because obviously, you know,
it's
whatever.
It's
another Fast Five. But
spoiler
I just
alert.
Love the scene towards the end, like after he's already gone ahead and he blew the whistle on Big Tobacco and he lost his wife, his kids. I mean, obviously he lost his job. And then after all that, they wind up not airing the full story. CBS 60 Minutes aired a very edited version of the story, and he's in this hotel room and he's a mess. He hasn't shaved in days. And the scene where Lowell Bergman, played by Al Pacino, calls him up and he gets on the phone and he gets like, you manipulated me into this. You greased the rails. And sounded very suicidal. And Al Pacino, as Lowell Bergman, was like saying, don't do anything stupid. You know, good guys like you are in short supply. And he's like standing in the middle of the water because it's the only place his cell phone can get reception. It's just a poignant moment in a really, really amazing film.
Yeah.
What's your right stuff?
I was trying to decide between a moment from LA Confidential, which is the moment in the rain when he confronts Kim's character and for sleeping with Guy Pearce's character, and it's so upset and really violent and it's a tense scene. But I'm going to go with Romper Stomper.
Romper Stomper.
I don't want to reveal anything if people haven't seen it, because I would say not many people would have seen this movie compared to all the other films that we're going to talk about, and they should watch it. It's on YouTube. The final face-off on the beach. It is sadistic, it's violent, it's horrible, it stays with you.
That's how
the film ends. It's terrible.
And by the way, yes, it is very easy to find. You don't have to go on any of these, you don't have to go on Netflix, you don't have to go on Amazon, you don't have to do any of these things. It is on YouTube. The whole movie is on YouTube.
Mm.
So just watch it at your own risk.
Yeah.
But please do watch it, because it is a powerful film, especially because of that last scene. And so many interesting details in our last detail. How great was that last week when our last detail, when
without
we were
Jack
doing
Nicholson,
Jack Nicholson, and he was
it
in
worked.
The last, it worked perfectly,
it worked,
didn't
really
it?
Well,
maybe
you could call this The Insider.
The Insider, right.
Talking
there you
about
go.
Trivia.
Well, hit me up with some Russell Crowe trivia.
Okay. Did you know
that
Crowe's grandfather was a cinematographer? And he actually received a British Honours Medal for his footage of World War II.
No
so it
way.
Runs in the family, filmmaking.
That is very, very cool. Did you know that Russell Crowe turned down the role of Wolverine in the first X-Men
That's
movie?
That's going to be my next point. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That gives a high five on the same page. Did you know that he turned down the role of Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, it was going to he had already committed to making A Beautiful Mind, so the production schedules overlapped. And he also turned down the lead in About a Boy.
Ah.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Interesting.
What else you got?
Has he done many comedies? Maybe back in the day in Australia, but Not so much since then.
No.
Yeah, he should. another one. Did you know that he and businessman Peter Holmes are caught in Australia? They're the majority owners of the rugby league team, the South Sydney Rabbitohs. So often you'll see Russell Crowe wearing a rabbit logo on his hat or green and red, and that's their colours, the rugby league team.
Interesting. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, he's a huge supporter.
Very, very cool. Did you know that for Master and Commander, Russell Crowe weighed 228 pounds?
Wow.
Yet for Cinderella Man, he went down to 176 pounds.
Whew.
Yeah, again, physically and emotionally committed to these roles.
He does.
But that's the name of the game, and that's why he's one of the best actors.
Wow.
Well, we're pausing right now for take care of some very, very important business. We love doing profiles. We know you love watching profiles on YouTube, on the Popcorn Talk Network, and of course, listening to iTunes, on profiles on iTunes. So that's why it is very, very, very important. We actually need these subscriptions on iTunes. So please go to iTunes, subscribe to profiles, rate and review us on iTunes. Cannot tell you how important it is for these ratings and reviews to happen so we can stay in business. Please go to our Facebook page. You're already doing it. Profiles with Malone and Mance is over 3,000 likes.
I like how you right? got all the, your points here.
All my points, right. It's right here. So I don't forget. This
iTunes,
is how important it
Facebook.
Is.
Facebook. Okay, now Twitter.
Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Alicia at Alicia Malone.
Yes.
I'm at Movie Mance.
One more time.
At Alicia Malone. At Movie Mance.
Yep.
No. At Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance. Come on, give it another high five.
Okay.
Take a drink, take a shot. And then there's the YouTube thing. I always mess up with this one. You take this.
Yeah. You can subscribe to us at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. And if you want to join in the live conversation, you happen to be free, 3 p.m. LA time on Tuesdays, then you can tune in then and join on the live chat. I've been looking at all the chat here. Mahmoud Bakker. I'm terrible with names, but I'm just going to blame my accent. Said, it's my first profiles. I came because I was impressed by Alicia and Scott's performance in Movie Fights.
Yes.
And the encyclopedic knowledge of Mance in the speed rounds and Alicia in speed rounds. And great job as fact checker.
Thank you so much. You were robbed, Alicia Malone. You should have won Movie Fights. She's
right.
The real champ.
Yeah.
I'm giving her my belt, even though I'm not wearing one, but I'm going to give it to her. But again, please share profiles with everyone you know.
You know what would be great?
What would be great?
Because Russell Crowe is so active on Twitter.
Yes.
I think it would be really cool if people could share this episode once it's done to @RussellCrowe and thank him for his time.
What a great idea.
Giving us time to interview him because it
yes.
was really special.
It was a special interview and yes, he is very active on Twitter. Of course, it's @RussellCrowe, so it's nice and easy. So please, if you're watching, if you're listening, which of course you are, please make sure you tweet out to thank @RussellCrowe for doing
that
profiles
nice.
With @AliciaMalone, @MovieMance, @ProfilesSK. Is that too much to ask? I don't think so. Back to the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Back to the show. Let's continue with Fast Five number 4, which is, let's see.
How's it going to look in your report?
It'll look like justice. That's what the man got. Justice.
Justice, yes. L.A. Confidential, released September 19th, 1997, directed by Curtis Hanson, cost $35 million to make, box office $126 million, nominated for 9 Academy Awards,
wow.
1-2 for Best Supporting Actress Kim Basinger, and a Best Adapted Screenplay, Curtis Hanson and Brian Helgeland, lost Best Picture and Best Director to
Titanic,
the king of the world. Unfortunate.
Up against Titanic. Titanic won everything. Otherwise, it would have done better. This, I have to say, is my favorite Russell Crowe movie.
Oh, okay.
I love the style, and I was watching it again this morning. Yeah, I love my classic movies, and I love film noirs, and this is a neo-noir crime thriller. It's based on a James Ellroy novel. It's the third in his L.A. Quartet series, and it is so stylish, and it also has some great homages to movie stars, like Veronica Lake, Kim's character's looking like her.
Lana Turner.
And it's stars two great Australians, Russell Crowe and
Guy Pearce.
And that's why people weren't expecting much from this movie. As you said, it was made for only $35 million. Curtis Hanson, he was coming from, you know, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Good films, but no one expected this from
Not
him.
Not prestigious. Right.
And then you had these two unknown actors in the lead roles. And then Kim's career was starting to fade a little bit. This was a great resurgence for her. Danny DeVito was in it too. And
hush,
Kevin Spacey. But Kevin Spacey was known as a character actor.
Kevin Spacey's great. this movie.
Once this movie went to the Cannes Film Festival, then people took notice.
Well, you mentioned the two Aussies. You know, we're saying Russell Crowe is an Aussie. He considers himself an Aussie.
And Guy Pearce was actually born in England, but he considers himself an Aussie too.
Okay,
so
there you go.
We claim that.
You would know that.
Yeah.
And we all should know that. In her review for the New York Times, Janet Maslin said, the two Australian actors, tightly wound Guy Pearce and fiery, brawny Russell Crowe, qualify as revelations. What I love about this film is everything you said. It's a neo-noir thriller, and it is the Chinatown of the 90s.
Yeah.
Corruption in L.A., corruption in the police force. Amazing score by Jerry Goldsmith. That film noir kind of score is really great.
Love it.
An American breakthrough for Russell Crowe. He'd already broken through in Australia because of Romper Stomper. Mm-hmm. But again, this was the movie where people really took notice of him, and it changed his career. He started doing a lot more prestigious roles. What's interesting is that he initially turned it down because he didn't think, knowing what we know now about the kind of movies he does, he didn't think that he could pull off playing such a tough guy.
Oh, really? Which is surprising because similar to Romper Stomper, this one in LA Confidential is a good guy.
Yeah.
But he has that same kind of violent tendencies and that, you know, that you feel like that he could burst at any moment.
Oh, yeah,
and
loose cannon.
And he is a tough guy, and Hando was a very tough guy. So yeah. That surprises me that he didn't think he could do it.
Well, he did.
And he did so well, and I love the good cop, bad cop with him and Guy Pearce's
character. Oh, it's
character.
Great. When they team up at the end, it's such a great moment.
So great.
It's so great.
It's such a complex story, but it's fine. You know, you don't get too lost. You just go along on the journey.
You just have to really pay attention because it is...
For all the details.
It is a very... It's a smart, taut, intense movie. It is very layered. Do not go to the bathroom in the middle of it or you will miss key points. It is a lot like Chinatown where you really... I mean, it's not convoluted, but it is a challenging film that you really have to follow along. And Russell Crowe based his performance on Sterling Hayden's performance in Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
Interesting.
So that's where he got the toughness from.
And I know that Curtis Hanson played a lot of film noirs and classic movies for the cast beforehand to give them an idea of what kind of look he was going for.
They nailed it.
They nailed it.
They nailed it pretty good. Who else nailed it was Liam Logrand, my brother.
Liam,
my brother from another mother.
Live.
I swear that Liam is my brother from another mother.
He's
I love this guy.
Brother.
He's awesome. Yes. My much, much, much younger brother. Crowe truly broke into Hollywood in the 1997 masterpiece L.A. Confidential. It's not hard to conjure up the belief that this character shares similar traits, oh, this is interesting, to the character of Popeye Doyle in The French Connection.
Mm.
Both walk the line between good and evil, yet at the same time are surprisingly likable. Crowe's ability to steal the show amongst actors like Kevin Spacey, Guy Pearce, Kim Basinger, and Danny DeVito demonstrated that this Australian from Neighbours was going places, and boy did he. Thanks, Liam.
And I think Guy Pearce was in Neighbours also.
Oh.
They're all in Neighbours. I just want to give a quick hello to Ryan Johnston, who it says he's 17 and loves Profiles, seen every episode. Thank you, Malone
yes!
and Matt.
Way to go.
So nice.
Love it.
Jim McCann also loves LA Confidential. Says, one of my all-time favorite movies. It was really my first exposure to a truly kinetic cinematic experience. Our viewers are so smart. With the way it steadily and consistently kept finding ways to raise the stakes before coming to an extraordinary climax. The plot could have easily gone off the rails at any moment with never knowing who is morally in the right. But the performance by Spacey, Pierce, and especially Crowe, along with the entire cast, are what kept it grounded and made it an unforgettable movie.
You know what else is unforgettable?
What?
Our profilers. They are the best. They are
the best.
I mean, you got Liam, you got Seb Lacey, you got Rasika, Rachel Cushing,
yeah,
Josh
Tyler
Willingham,
Myers,
Steve Zissou, otherwise
Bill
known
Pollahan,
as Justin Best, Billy Pollahan, Mark Tordai.
Yeah.
We could keep going, and we will keep going.
Like our buddies.
Moving on with your favorite part.
Quiz show.
The quiz show part. Here's my question for you, Alicia Malone, which, by the way, weren't you on Neighbors?
I wasn't.
You should be.
No, I did work behind the scenes in Home and Away for a bit, but anyway.
Okay, well, you should be on Neighbors.
And Margot Robbie was in Home and Away. Oh, no, she was in Neighbors.
She was in Neighbors.
Oh, my God.
Your doppelganger, Margot Robbie.
I wish.
Which of the following Russell Crowe movies was not directed by Ridley Scott?
Okay,
was it A Good Year?
Yeah.
B, Proof of Life?
Yeah.
C, Body of Lies?
Yeah.
Or D, Robin Hood?
buddy. Oh, sorry. Proof of Life.
Proof of Life. Yes, she is correct. I did not have to give you the wink to help
Yay!
Out. Hooray.
All right. Here comes yours.
Okay, let's hear it.
So The Insider was based on a Vanity Fair article. Which other Russell Crowe film was based on a Vanity Fair article?
Oh.
Was it Proof of Life, Cinderella Man, or A Beautiful Mind?
Oh, man. Well, Beautiful Mind was based on the novel by Sylvia Nasar, so that's out.
Well, yeah.
What was the other one? Was Proof of Life? And what was the other one?
Cinderella Man?
Proof of Life.
No, it was actually Beautiful Mind.
Oh, man!
So I think both The Insider and Beautiful Mind, I mean, they're based on other things, like The Insider with 60 Minutes, but also on Vanity Fair.
I blew it. I absolutely friggin' blew it. I'm a failure. Well, let's move on to number three in our Fast Five. This is a good time to do that. Coming in at number three is...
They're afraid of you, aren't they?
They should be.
Great line. I'm so glad you picked that line. Give it a high five.
How?
That line, they're sitting in the car just at the river, right? And he goes, they're afraid of you, aren't they? And he just
looks
and he goes,
they're afraid of you, aren't they?
They should be.
One more time. Let's hear one more time.
They're afraid of you, aren't they?
They should be.
I love that line. I remember when that movie was nominated for all the Oscars and was going through award season, when the trades were up and running daily and the studios would spend millions of dollars on their ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. The image they used for The Insider was a close-up of Pacino saying, they're afraid of you, and then a close-up of Russell Crowe's eye.
Oh, really?
They should be.
There you go. I chose well.
You chose quite well. I freaking love this movie. Again, it's my favorite Russell Crowe film. Released November 5th, 1999. Directed by Michael Mann. Cost $90 million to make. Box office worldwide, $60 million worldwide. So it bombed. But it was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor for Russell Crowe.
Well, one of the producers suggested Russell Crowe after seeing him in L.A. Confidential.
Okay.
And flew him to meet Michael Mann, and they spent 3 hours or so reading through lines. And then Crowe at the time didn't think he could play this character because he was only 33. I say only because that's my age. He had to play someone in his 50s, but eventually he took on the role, and then, of course, he gained weight, he shaved his hairline back, and he bleached his hair several times. He had makeup put on, a complete transformation.
Total physical and emotional transformation. Completely loses himself in this role. This is a film about a tobacco whistleblower, and it plays out like a corporate thriller.
Yeah, or like a political thriller. It's kind of like a All the President's Men or China Syndrome.
It's funny. You should say, like, right here, my personal favorite Russell Crowe movie, it's the All the President's Men of the 90s.
Yeah, how's that feel?
Way to go.
Because also it talks about the media as well.
Exactly. And it's a compelling film. It's suspenseful. And again, a movie about a tobacco whistleblower could be really boring, but it plays out like a thriller, which is part of the greatness of it.
157 minutes long, but it does not feel like
it. It is a fast movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching this film. Time Magazine, in their review, said, when Crowe gets to command the screen, The Insider comes to life.
And often when you watch a Michael Mann film, you can really feel his style. Sometimes his style is quite overpowering. But in The Insider, it's quite laid back and subtle. I like, though, the way he uses really close-ups and tight shots because it's got this like claustrophobic feel.
Totally does.
But then it does move at this great pace. You feel like the walls are coming closer and closer and closer in on him. Interestingly, Russell couldn't actually speak with Jeffrey, the real guy, because Jeffrey was still under a confidentiality agreement.
So we listened to 6 hours of
tapes
of him. We both did the same amount of research for this. But just the whole aspect, going back to the All the President's Men, the way journalism was challenged in the name of a corporate sale. And the tragedy that the story that initially aired was so heavily edited, they had to block him out, and the full story didn't run until it was much too late.
Mm-hmm.
But it is such a great that the interplay between Pacino and Crowe.
Yeah.
Pacino is refreshingly understated in this performance.
Yeah.
Except for the one scene where he's like, you pay me to get guys like Wygant to draw him out? Is he telling the truth? Yes. Are we going to air it? Of course not.
Yeah.
Such a great scene.
I think Russell Crowe is always fantastic at playing off other actors. So you often see him in these movies we're talking about against someone really powerful and holding his own. So him and Pacino together.
They're great.
Fantastic.
They're so great. And Rachel Cushing, who's just what an amazing writer she is, says, the one that stands out to me as Crow's most immersive and intriguing is his role as Michael Mann's The Insider. His Jeffrey Wigand feels so authentic. Crow, the actor, utterly disappears into the role. His weight, his hair, the look, the way he walks, his paranoia, etc., all work to paint a picture of a completely believable and conflicted man, and by no mean feat to stand out as such a fully realized character in a movie that also stars Al Pacino and Christopher Plummer. This is one of Mann's best thrillers because of its sharp commentary of the tobacco industry and the lines we cross to tell the truth, and it is indebted to Crow for bringing Wigand to life with such authenticity and a bravado-less conviction.
Nice.
Way to go, Rachel Cushing.
And thanks to Victor Garcia, says, I look like I'm 10 years younger. Well, it's good. I feel like I'm 10 years younger.
You definitely.
And Rachel Cushing is watching right now. So thank you. She also ran the brackets this week. So I'm going to just do them now.
Why? Go for it.
Why not? So
why not?
Thanks to Rachel Cushing. Run the brackets on our Facebook page. Profiles with Malone and Mance.
Make sure you go to Profiles with Malone and Mance. Give it a
like.
Join in on the bracket fun. I mean, we include our profilers in the show. It's not just you and me. It's them too. They're all part of the conversation. It's a big team. Everybody joins in, picking their best movies, why they love them so much. Obviously, we're reading them on the air.
Mm-hmm.
They join in on the brackets. So
the brackets,
take it away.
Every week, they pit two movies or two characters against each other, and then they get down to semifinals and finals, and then the winner. So this week it was Russell Crowe characters, and it was Maximus versus Jeffrey from The Insider, and then Bud White from LA Confidential versus John Nash from A Beautiful Mind. It came down to Maximus versus John Nash.
I'm going to go with Maximus.
Yeah.
Has to be Maximus.
It was Maximus.
My name is Gladiator.
Yeah, you've got yours.
You know,
I've got my little cartoon.
Father to a
Maximus.
Murdered son, husband to a murdered wife.
Yes.
And I will have my vengeance.
The favorite character of our profilers. Thanks to everyone who took part.
Thanks
to
everyone
that.
Who took part. So please go to our Facebook page, Profiles Malone Mance. Like us. Okay, anyway.
I think they got it.
Moving on to, listen, again, this was any one of these movies mentioned in our next section, the others, could have been in our Fast Five.
Oh,
I
so
think
many.
So many. So why don't you hit me up with some of yours?
Cinderella Mance. 2005, directed by Ron Howard, about the boxer James Braddock, who turned his career around during the Depression. This was an incredible performance from Russell Crowe.
I agree. In fact, I went back to the Movie Mance review archives, and I did review Cinderella Man back in 2005, and I said at the time, and I still hold to this, Crowe may be one of the most passionate actors working today, but he seems to dig deeper for Howard's films and gives his characters more heart. His performance here runs a gamut of emotions and ranks among his very best.
Very smart.
Well,
Mr. Mance.
Well, thank you, Miss Malone. I'm going to go with 310 to Yuma.
Yes.
I love this film. It was one of my favorite movies of 2007. Came out September, directed by James Mangold. Plays Ben Wade, an outlaw.
It's a remake.
This is a perfect remake. When people say, what are your favorite remakes of all time? The way this took the premise of the original 1950-something film, I think it was 53, and expanded on it. It opened it up, and it fleshed out the characters. It's a perfect example of a remake. And just the back and forth between Crow and Christian Bale,
mm-hmm.
and Ben Foster is in the movie, too. He's a lunatic.
He's always great.
Yeah, he's always great. But in that film, I said at the time, Russell Crowe's brilliant performance as the outlaw who can effortlessly switch from being magnetic and charming to rotten and vicious at the top of the drop of a hat.
And it's called Russell Crowe Rides Again.
Russell Crowe, yes it is.
Master and Commander from 2003.
Great
Peter
movie.
Weir, the epic. I mean, it's such a big movie, but his performance, Russell Crowe's performance, really grounds the whole thing.
Definitely. That's a grand, glorious film.
He's good at epics.
I mean, that whole thing, that was Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World, was supposed to be the first in a series of, you know, a franchise, but it cost $150 million to make, and it made $215 million worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, when you take out
two Oscars.
But it didn't make that much for them to warrant moving ahead with a sequel, which is too bad because it's a great film. Let's go with American Gangster. 2007, again, our man Ridley Scott. What I love about this movie is just how much it feels like Heat.
Yeah.
Because Denzel Washington's
opposite side
drug lord and Richie Roberts, the detective played by Russell Crowe, they don't meet until the end. Mm-hmm. But this, I think this is a fantastic film. And at the time I said that it felt like Heat, so I don't need to read that again.
I like that you haven't changed your mind on these movies.
No way! I have not changed my mind on any of these films.
Your opinion. And nice to see Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington back again, because last time we saw them before that was in Virtuosity, which I know Guilty Movie Pleasures covered 1 week.
Oh,
talking
really?
About that movie. I'm going to go with an Australian one, The Sum of Us from 1994. And Russell Crowe played a gay man living with his widowed father, and they were both looking for love. It's a really sweet movie, really heartwarming movie, and once again showed his talents and how much he can change. And it's a funny movie as well, so it's worth a watch.
Well, also worth a watch is State of Play from 2009. You know, this is an underrated, underseen film from another movie about journalism, really. Another film that a lot of people on our Facebook page, you know, people were talking about this next film. The Next 3 Days is saying they didn't really like it very much. And it's not one of his best films, but it's a solid thriller.
Yeah.
On the run through with Elizabeth Banks. Next 3 Days.
Body of Lies. I mean, that was a Ridley Scott film. The story wasn't that interesting, but what made it interesting was Russell Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio together.
What is your take on Robin Hood? It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think it ultimately felt a little too much like Gladiator in terms of the epic, cast of thousands, the battle scenes. But it's definitely a solid movie. Again,
it does a great job.
Great movies. Coming in at number 2, though, in our Fast Five is...
My quest has taken me through the physical, the metaphysical, the delusional, and back.
Wow.
A Beautiful Mind.
A Beautiful Mind came out 2001, December 21st, directed by Ron Howard. Cost $58 million to make. Box office, $313 million worldwide. 8 Oscar nominations. 1 for Best Picture, Best Director. Supporting actress for Jennifer Connelly. An adapted screenplay by Akiva Goldsman.
Russell lost to Denzel.
Lost at Denzel, right. Yeah. And they were up against each other in 1999 for The Insider and for, what was that movie? The Hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
The Hurricane. Yes. That's right. Denzel Washington. So
I love that.
They were up against each other again.
Well, here comes an interesting question.
Yep.
So when it comes to biopics, how much do you want them to stick to the truth? Or how much do you think that they can blur the lines a little to tell a good story?
I know why you're asking.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of controversy around The Beautiful Mind because it sort of took creative liberties with some of the facts.
Some of his personal life. So apparently he was bisexual, divorced, had another family, had a child out of wedlock, but they don't tell that story.
Here's my answer to that question. I just want to watch a good movie.
Yeah, I agree. I have the same answer.
This is not a documentary.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think they went too far with skirting around some of the other facts of his life. Just make a good movie. If I want to watch a documentary, I'll watch a documentary. If I want to know more about him, I'll look it up, especially now because of the internet. But I just want to be told a good, engaging, and engrossing story, and that's what this movie is.
I mean, if it was completely positive and they changed everything, then I would have a problem with that.
Sure.
But they don't shy away from showing his descent into schizophrenia.
Right. It's a revealing look at mental illness, and that's a very big, powerful reason why the movie is so riveting. The performances are superb. It's moving. It's inspirational. You know, the numbers add up to a triumph of the cinematic spirit.
And I love the way it also plays with the audience. So when you start to watch the film, you don't know who's real and who's not. It plays with your perceptions of everything you see on screen. You kind of believe. So when you first see this movie, the very first time, when you see certain characters, you believe it because they're there.
You didn't have any idea, none?
No. When I first watched it, no. I was like, wow, he's involved with these crazy plots and the FBI. And when I watched it, again, now I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it.
I can see it, right? Yeah.
The very first time, I got hook, line, sinker. And then, what?
What happened? I remember thinking
maybe the Ed Harris thing, I was like, yeah, this is weird, but okay, I'll go with it. And I thought, maybe not. But Paul Bettany, I had no idea.
Yeah, the Ed Harris character, I started to suspect. But Paul Bettany, I did not see that coming. Originally considered to play John Nash, was Tom Cruise.
Oh.
And a whole who's who of actresses tried out for the role of Alicia Malone. I mean, Alicia Nash. Brittany Murphy, Charlize Theron, Ashley Judd, Julia Ormond, and Meg Ryan. A lot of actresses tried out for that role.
And Russell Crowe, this was a movie that really showed his acting ability. He had that confusion and fear in his eyes. You could really see and you felt empathy for what he was going through.
Definitely.
Brilliant mind, and then he lost control of it in some aspects of his life.
Well, looking back on the Movie Mass Review archives back in 2001, by the way, I saw this movie, three movies that day on December 21st, 2001. I started off, I don't know. I like Rain Man.
Yeah,
it was December 21st, the day this movie came out. I saw A Beautiful Mind first. So that was my warm up. Then I went and saw Black Hawk Down, which was the full body workout.
Yeah.
And then the last movie I saw was Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius, which was the cool down period.
It's a perfect, like,
perfect
marathon.
Arc of going to the movies. It was all in the AMC Century City. But at the time I said, Crowe goes through a remarkable transformation that all but dwarfs his brilliant turn in 1999's The Insider. Not only does he pull up playing the same character over the course of 50 years, but he also gives plenty of heart and soul to a character who's by and large periodically arrogant and unlikable.
Yeah, at times, definitely. So Billy Polahan, who I saw just left. Oh, no, he's still there. Hi, Billy. Still on the live chat. He says, A Beautiful Mind is one of the saddest and most psychologically interesting movies this profiler has ever seen. The story of John Nash and Crowe's triumphant performance as a shy and quiet man with a gift of economics that develops paranoid schizophrenia is so believable you don't even really see Crowe playing a part, but you see John Nash, the man himself, and what he went through. The film is a great character study in how far an actor can play a mentally disabled person without being offensive, and Russell Crowe pulls that off brilliantly. I saw a fantastic film from Ron Howard and a fantastic performance and actor in Russell Crowe. Hashtag film geek. Hashtag
profile for life. Oh, Camille Howard had this to say about A Beautiful Mind. It's hard to pick a favorite performance of Crowe's, but his work in A Beautiful Mind is, for lack of a better word, beautiful. He plays John Nash with so much vulnerability and subtlety that it humanizes the character so that we can really understand him. This is my first blood with Russell Crowe, my favorite interpretation of the tortured genius trope.
Yeah.
Well.
Tortured genius, that's something that Benedict Cumberbatch does really well.
Yeah, it does. Good point.
It kind of feels similar to Imitation Game.
It's Imitation Game. You're absolutely right. Way to go. That gets a high five. Bringing it to 14 years. Okay. Now the moment of truth.
Yes.
Again, we had a great interview with Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
I got to say that it was a really special moment to get the email from Warner Brothers. How would you like to interview Russell Crowe for Profiles? That meant that people are watching, they are listening, they are noticing what we are doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time, week after week, we love doing this, and it meant we have arrived. The studios are coming to us now.
That's right.
And he is making his directorial debut with the Water Diviner. And what did you think of this film?
I liked it. It's an interesting story. It's an Australian story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an Australian story of the Australian and the New Zealand troops who fought over in Turkey. And it's a film that I think we learn a lot about in Australia, but I don't know if many people in America know that story. It's a father trying to find his sons after they went off to war.
Three sons, exactly.
Three sons.
I thought it's a tense film.
It's
engaging.
Shot.
It's beautifully shot.
There's a dust storm moment when they have to hide. I mean, I think it's a film that'll definitely appeal more to Australians and New Zealanders, but maybe people who don't know much about the history will want to learn.
Well, I didn't know anything about the history. I mean, I did see Gallipoli, the Mel Gibson, Peter Weir movie back in the day, but I feel like I learned a lot about the ordeal from this movie too.
Yeah.
It's a solid, old-fashioned piece of epic filmmaking.
A lot of Australian actors in this one, and it's him and Dan Wiley back together, and Dan Wiley was in Romper Stomper.
Oh, there
it's
you go.
Skinheads.
Bringing it back.
Yeah.
But I thought this is an accomplished piece of work, a solid piece of filmmaking. I thought it did a great job behind the camera and in front of the camera, too. He gives a great performance.
Interesting to see what he does next.
It'd be very interesting to see what he does behind the camera.
Behind the camera, yeah.
Yes, definitely. But he definitely is a solid, accomplished director. And here now is our conversation with Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, Thank you so much for joining us on Profiles. Every week we look at one of the greatest filmmakers, actors, and actresses of all time. This week, you are our profile mate.
I'm such a lucky devil.
You are. I really enjoyed watching The Water Diviner because coming from Australia, it's such an important story to get out to the world. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like this story chose you to direct it?
That's how it feels, really, because I was in the middle of a very busy professional year and very complicated private year as well. And this script arrived, and it was funny. I was reading it, and I had that visceral connection I look for as an actor, you know, where I felt that I was connecting to the piece, and I was starting to make notes on behalf of the character. But this other thing was happening, where there was a voice coming out of me that I hadn't really heard before. You know, I've had the intellectual concept in my mind of directing for a long time, but now this voice was coming out of me saying, you must take responsibility for this story. Only you can read between the lines. Only you can see into its shadows. So, yeah, it was a funny thing because I was developing a whole bunch of other stuff, and then everything changed.
You've worked with so many great directors, Ron Howard, Peter Weir, Ridley Scott, 5 times. So for your first time directing, who did you, you know, steal from the most?
Everybody. You know, I have absolutely no problem saying that because, you know, when you're a creative artist, influence is a real thing, mm-hmm. you know. And those that tell you that they're, you know, not available to influence are just bullshitting. You know? you know, but, you know, everybody that you work with, you learn from. Sometimes you learn things that you will apply, and other times you learn things that you would never do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a two-way street. But if you think about it, man, I've been working in front of a camera since I was 6 years old. I've been making lead roles in feature films for 25 years.
Nice.
So I have a massive accumulation of on-set experience, probably more than any director that I've worked with, you know?
Sure.
Because a director, it takes 3 years to make a movie. As an actor, you can make 3 movies a year, mm-hmm. you know? So... and because of playing lead roles, I'm always in that sort of, you know, that problem-solving cabal. So there's a lot of things that come up on the film that, you know, you recognize and you know how to solve it, you know. For years and years, I only worked with directors who were significantly older than me. And strange little inaudible click happens in the background and you find yourself on sets where the directors are significantly younger than you.
Yeah.
You know? And every now and then they'll be sort of doing something and you recognize what they're doing is painting themselves into a corner. So you just try and make yourself available for when they do ask you the question, how do I get myself out of this? And you sort of, you know, you help them out. And I suppose it's those kind of experiences that fed into the confidence to step forward and actually do it myself.
Did that make it slightly easier then when it came to starring and directing at the same time?
I didn't actually find that to be that complicated.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I've always been a narrative-based actor. I want to know, you know, very specifically where I am in the story and how I can service the story. I've always had one part of me that is very technically orientated. What is the lens we're using? How's the camera moving? What does this particular director want out of this shot? I've never been the actor, for very good reason, who believes that the camera either loves you or it doesn't. You know, mm-hmm. I know it's inanimate and I know it needs to be fed. So if you're that kind of performer already, it's actually not that big a step. Now, certainly, you will get to the end of the day doing the dual jobs and you will know that you've had a day of work, you know. but I just wanted to construct an energy on my film set that I would like to be involved with, you know. I wanted the communication to be open, wanted questions answered, and I wanted an energy around me where everybody felt that they were allowed to be at their very best. You know, and that starts and ends really with communication, mm-hmm. answering people's questions, understanding how much of a privilege it is to be the director, to be allowed to bring all these creative hearts and minds to you who all are trying to contribute and letting them know that their contribution is valid.
Looking back on your body of work, I got to tell you, we're really blown away by just the level of quality you've done with so many films.
Oh,
but
thank you, man.
We're just dying to know, like, what are the one or two films, looking back, that you really feel were the most rewarding to you as an actor that helped you get to step behind the camera for the first time?
There's a lot of, you know, extremely challenging roles in that list of films, you know. But the two films that I often list as being my favorite in terms of the experience of them added to the character that I played are the two films I did with Ron Howard. Beautiful Mind and Cinderella Man. And I like those characters for completely different reasons, and they're both extremely complicated for very different reasons, you know. However, if I was only allowed to make one more movie, I'd prefer to do that with Ridley Scott. You know, I love to be on his set. I love his attitude towards the business. I love how athletic he makes the camera. I love how fully engaged he is. It's like working for Titian or Michelangelo or some genius artist, you know. You know, we share an aesthetic, we share a sense of humor, and we're both aware that we work in the most expensive commercial art form that exists. And that needs to be respected, mm-hmm. you know? So the trick always is you got to do something clever, but you want to do it cheaper than the next bloke, you know? And so Ridley and I share that sort of aim and goal. And, you know, I love being on film sets with him. And I've learnt a massive amount from him. And, that would be my choice if it was the last movie I was ever to ever do.
Thank you so much
for joining us on Profiles. It's an honor. Thank you so much.
So cool. Give it up.
Yeah,
give it up.
I'm going to do this because I've got sweat marks. So Whoops.
I'll come over to your side. There you go. All right. Here's the thing. Again, big, big thanks to Russell Crowe for taking the time to talk with us. He must have been exhausted. It was the end of the day, but he still found the time to sit down with us for Profiles. Mm-hmm. So please make sure you send him a tweet thanking him at Russell Crowe for sitting down with Alicia Malone and Movie Mance for Profiles. That would really, really, really be awesome. I know
Definitely.
He'd appreciate it. We'd appreciate
yeah.
it. Big thanks to Russell Crowe. That was awesome.
And it was awesome that he had his coffee there and a barista so I could get a flat white.
You got your flat white.
This is my favorite coffee that I really miss from home. So it tastes like home for me.
It's a little bit of home. You're talking to Russell Crowe. It's all good.
Yes.
And that brings us to number one in our Fast Five. Which had to be...
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Yes, we are entertained. It is Gladiator. Released May 5th, 2000, directed by...
Ridley Scott.
Cost $103 million to make. Box office $458 million worldwide. 12 Oscar nominations, 1-5, including Best Picture and Best Actor for Russell Crowe. This is an epic in every sense of the word. Revitalized the Swords and Sandals epic yeah. and a great movie.
Yeah, and the first partnership between Russell and Ridley, and they went on to do some great movies together, and it sounds like they'll do more together
yes.
in the future,
oh,
which
yeah.
is always great to see. Now, I don't usually like these sword and sandal epics, and I know we talked about this in our Ridley Scott episode, mm-hmm. but this one, Gladiator, is really entertaining. It has a great story, a great character in Maximus, someone who you feel for and someone that you completely believe as this tough guy who could do all these battles and win, and it looks beautiful. It's such a believable world. And once again, Russell Crowe with Joaquin Phoenix together. What a power couple. On screen. It sounded like I was talking about, you know. Anyway.
Well, in his review for the Wall Street Journal, Joe Morgenstern said, Russell Crowe doesn't use tricks to court our approval. He earns it the old-fashioned way by daring to be quiet, if not silent, and intensely strong. Mm-hmm. And that this was just a great hero's journey
and
of a performance.
A great revenge movie,
oh,
too.
Oh, so great.
Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife.
And I will have my vengeance.
Yes.
In this life. And the next.
And the next.
Wow, so great. Now, of course, this was because it hadn't been done like this on this scale before, it was a hard movie to make. Russell Crowe questioned every aspect of the script for good reason. And there were times when he came up with his own dialogue.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning of the film where he goes, at my signal, unleash hell. That's from him.
Wow.
Yes.
And that's such an iconic line. Tom Smith says on the live chat, Crowe and Scott's DVD commentary on Gladiator is worth a look. Some funny and really, really cool stories. And then Mark Tordai suggests Russell Crowe in an alien movie directed by Sir Ridley.
Oh, what a great idea that is.
I don't think he's done sci-fi, has he?
Has Russell Crowe done a sci-fi movie?
And Joshua Price says, can anyone find a way to describe this movie without using the word epic? No.
No, absolutely not. It is epic, so really there you epic. Go. Yeah. Other thing you got to know is there are no CGI tigers. Those tigers were real.
Yes.
And Russell Crowe's haircut was inspired by... George Michael.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now you do.
That is interesting.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Mel Gibson actually turned this down. I know we talked about this.
Well, pause.
I was like, lost my train of thought here for a second. Like, that gets a high five. Come on. You know, I'll get this again to show your underarms, whatever. Mel Gibson turned this down. He thought he was too old. He was 43 at the time, and Russell Crowe was 36. Because I remember you asked me when we did our show on Ridley Scott, and I said the same exact thing. You said, wait, how old was Russell Crowe if Mel Gibson was 43 and he turned it down? And I didn't know. So it took me 4 months to figure out the answer.
36. A lot of people talking about the score on Gladiator by Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer.
And a lot of people suggesting that we do a profiles on Hans Zimmer. We will. I promise you we will.
You know why we will? Because you're going to go to iTunes and you're going to subscribe, rate, and review us. We need those ratings and reviews to survive. You're also going to follow our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance, because that is where you get to join in all the fun. It is a really fun page. You want to be a part of it, so please like that page. Follow us on YouTube. Subscribe to YouTube. .com/PopcornTalkNetwork. Go to Profiles. Did I get that right?
You did.
And share everything. Share it all. What did our profilers have to say about Gladiator?
Tyler Myers says, I love Gladiator because it works both as an intense historical epic and a great revenge story. Russell Crowe is absolutely badass and brilliant as Maximus Decimus Meridius. Did I get that right?
Yep.
And Joaquin Phoenix is beyond creepy as the despicable Commodus.
That vexes me.
The score by Hans Zimmer only enhances the epicness of the movie, and the movie knows just when to add real human emotion amongst the amazing action sequences, particularly the ones inside the Colosseum. Incredible movie.
Incredible movie. Cathal Thomas Coleman gets the last word on our profiles on Russell Crowe.
We did Ridley Scott already.
Gladiator has to be my top Russell Crowe film and performance as Maximus. Maximus! Maximus! He is a very human Roman general turned slave in Gladiator. I quote that film all the time. We do too. LA Confidential really consolidated Crowe as a great actor and showed audiences his range, The Insider and A Beautiful Mind. Also allowed him to work with directors Michael Mann and Ron Howard, but his most well-known professional relationship was with Ridley freaking Scott.
And Isaac Robinson says, first time watching Profiles live. It's awesome since I'm a huge fan of the show. Thanks for the great informative show. So with that, I close my book.
And we go
done.
Through our fast five one more That's time. Right. We recount. Nice try, Lauche. Number five is Romper Stomper. Number four, LA Confidential. Number three, The Insider. Number two, A Beautiful Mind. Number one, Gladiator. And then, wait, next time on Profiles, we could just post it on Facebook, but why wait when we can tell you now that our next profile is going to be...
My choice.
Your Marlon choice. Brando. Marlon Brando. Stella. He is a contender in every sense of the word. We're making you an offer you can't refuse. Yes. Come back next time for Profiles. So until next time, bye!
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.